Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few Black-owned radio stations, and you're live with the best mind in Black America, me, Sean Williams, and this is the Cutting Edge Show. My guest co-host is Justin Jackson. This evening, my guest is Goldie Robinson. He is the owner and lead instructor for You Carry Solutions. Welcome to the Cutting Edge.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. Goldie, do you think African Americans nationally have been slower to embrace concealed carry?
Do I think they've been what to embrace? I'm sorry.
Do you think African Americans nationally have been slower to embrace concealed carry?
I don't want to say slower. I think there's just not a lot of information out there that may be readily available to African Americans on one side. I wouldn't say necessarily slower, though. I think there's just a lot of confusion, a lot of misunderstood things about guns and as they pertain to concealed carry.
Okay. In your opinion, do you think that Black people have equal gun rights?
Good question. I'm going to say yes. Is it perceived differently at times? Yes.
So what are your thought process with, a gun right owner who was carrying a gun, such as, Philando Castile, who had the right to carry that gun, and on paper he had that right, but in real life he didn't, because we see the outcome of what happened there. And many other instances like that.
With that type of situation, or those situations that you're referring to, it comes back to, in my opinion, the climate of this time and this that we're in, and some of the issues. I don't think there's just one direction we can point it in. What I'm saying is, I don't think it's just racism. It's not just ignorance. It's not just favoritism from one side or the other. I think there are a whole host of issues. As far as I can certainly see or understand why someone may be apprehensive from the African-American community when it comes to carrying a firearm with what we've seen recently. But I think there are several factors for that.
But can you name a safer time in American history where it's been safer for Black men and women to carry guns here in America?
I think another time where it's been safer other than today?
Yes, it's been safer than, modern day where we are right now.
No, not off the top of my head. So when you say safe, do you mean just as a permission, as in I'm a legal gun owner or a person, someone that has legal authority to carry a firearm, or just period?
I'm saying just period. I mean, obviously, we know the 13th Amendment supposedly has set slaves free, and supposedly before they had given gained these rights underneath the Constitution. Which would also imply the Second Amendment, to carry a firearm as well. But, from the research that I have done and the things that I have seen, throughout my lifetime, people talk about, we have the same rights, But I'm like, if I exercise my rights, I get treated completely different. So I guess my question to you is pertaining to, with that same, type of thought process of not necessarily the law says I can carry a gun, but me feeling safe while carrying a gun. Has there been a safer time in, Black America? Because in my vision, the farther back we go, the worse it gets.
Taking that, if we wanted to put that a step further, I would say keep pushing then, me personally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the easiest way for me to speak. I'll speak to myself. Myself, I am not, I don't think about it in those terms. I mean, it comes to mind sometimes, You know, to take it a step further, I was recently pulled over. So I recently just had an interaction with the police, and it was fine. Now, have I had negative instances or negative experiences with the police while I've been or while I've had this this capacity? Yes, I have. And why said experience was why it happened, I can't say. I mean, I honestly don't know. I didn't get any explanation. But for Black America, I mean, maybe we can say no, but I would keep pushing. I certainly would not stop. So let's say, go ahead.
I was just saying most definitely. Let me just interject real quick with you. We have a caller 5073. You have a question or comment?
Yeah, I have a question. Do you feel that all Black people should have a concealed weapon legally?
Do I feel that we should legally?
Yes.
I think everyone should have a gun legally. That's my opinion.
Regardless of how old they are, I mean, I am a 74-year-old woman, and I never really, well, when I was younger, I say when I moved to Texas in the 90s, that was the first time I had, you know, carried a gun legally. I used to carry a lot of them when I was young because it wasn't a problem. But everybody there had one. We probably were the only two residents, my husband and I, who did not have a firearm. So we went out and we bought them. And see, and when we came back to Illinois, they were not legal. And we could walk around with it in our hand if we wanted to in Texas. But here, they don't do the same thing. My thing, and my other question is, if you own a gun, do you recommend that everybody learn how to use it?
Absolutely. That's any tool. Whether it's a knife, some people or some students that even come to UCary haven't made up their mind if they want to utilize the firearm for self-defense. They just are preparing to have the right, and when I say right, I mean legally, in their respective state. And absolutely, absolutely.
Okay, one more question. Okay, if you've not received your FOID card, can you still buy a gun or take lessons?
In the state of Illinois, you cannot purchase without your FOID card. However, you can still utilize a firearm. Someone with a valid FOID card has to be with you present at all times. As far as taking lessons, myself or another instructor will be licensed and have their valid FOID card, so yes.
Okay, well, I'm going to sign up then. Thank you.
Excellent, excellent. You're very welcome.
And we have another caller, caller 6120. You're on the air, 6120.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hello?
Yeah,
I had a question. Does the ATF issue a CCP or a concealed carry permit that authorizes a person to carry firearms throughout the United States?
You said the ATF?
Yeah. Do they, like, issue a CCP? Because I know in most places you have to do it. I guess the working assumption is that you have to do it jurisdiction by jurisdiction. And there's no government agency that just give you a blanket CCP or, you know, concealed carry permit that allows you to take your gun wherever you want to go.
To my current level of knowledge, that would be correct. However, I'm not familiar too much with the – if the ATF issued such a license or such a document, I would almost be certain that you would have to complete the training with them and not just the application process.
Okay, yeah, that's the only question that I have, though. But all right, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
And I can say, you know, I haven't been, you know, on board with a lot of stuff that this current administration have been doing. And one thing that I have agreed with is the push for a national firearm license, you know, where you know, you get your license and you are able to, you know, have a firearm throughout the United States, kind of like your driver's license. You know, what are your thoughts on that?
I wouldn't mind submitting to that. The problem that I have with some legislation that people want to push or some ideas are the ones that negatively impact the legal gun owner. I'm sure we can all agree that most criminals will not attempt to obtain a firearm legally or carry it legally, so it's not, you know, we're not concerned about that part. But when they want to tax, and I'm speaking for Illinois specifically now, tax the life out of gun owners or add nonsensical taxes to the number or the amount of guns or ammunition someone may have, that's absurd. I think we certainly need to focus on how they're obtained or how easy, have a process in place. But I have a big problem with someone telling me, someone with an acceptable record as far as guns are concerned and obeys the law, that I have to be, in a sense, punished in my mind because I own said firearm or a certain amount of ammunition, et cetera.
But, I mean, that's a good valid point. But my question then will become, you know, isn't everyone innocent until they become a criminal? You know, like, a criminal isn't born a criminal. You know, a person doesn't just, you know, become a criminal because of, you know, the way he or she looks or anything like that. It's not until they commit a criminal act. So with that, you know, not, you know, put a little bit of pause on that?
I'm not sure I understand. So are you saying the restriction should not be applied until the criminal act's been completed?
I mean, for me, personally, I feel like far as restrictions goes, you know, I oppose, you know, gun restrictions, you know, very heavily, except for those that are military grade weapons. And I also oppose, you know, like hunting around drums. You know, I don't think people should be able to kill, should have the power to, you know, take mass life in our society at a very quick time. You know, but at the end of the day, as far as like being able to have the right to own a firearm and have a gun, I believe, you know, regardless of record, anyone who's not in prison or in jail should be able to have that right, since it is a right and not a privilege. You know, I feel like guns are considered more of a privilege than a right. And I think that we should be more on the line of pushing for it to be a right. So those who are not in prison, those who are not in jail or in custody, should be able to have that fire, have the right to have a firearm, regardless of what, you know, their history is. My question that I was proposing to you when you was talking about how like a criminal, you know, is not really worried about, you know, trying to go through the legal means, this and that of the other, you know, but my thought process, just when I hear the word criminal, you know, it just made me cringe because, you know, who's not a criminal? I mean, like, we all have be sped at one point in time. We all have broken some kind of a law at one point in time, you know what I mean? And a person isn't a criminal until they actually break that law. So even if, like, if we look at a lot of these mass shootings, you know, for example, the mass shooting in Vegas, you know, those firearms were obtained legally. He was not a criminal, you know, but some of the legislations that are being put in place is a stop situation, which I don't really think they're stopping them, but like, it's to help make those situations harder. You know, what are your thoughts?
Some, but they need to be very clear. And using that same example, so no one's trying to prohibit people from driving, but the number of drunk drivers or the number of Americans that are killed every year in this country from drunk drivers does not seem to be on the same appear to be on the same platform as firearms are or have been. One time they tried to take away alcohol. That didn't go well. We saw how well that worked out. I mean, we can keep going. So they're just, in my opinion, there needs to be a common sense approach to it. How do we keep,
go ahead. No, go ahead.
How do we keep or help keep innocent people safe? When I say innocent, Vegas is a very good example of that. People safe without infringing on the rights.
Right. Now, what do you think about, like, you know, people who have, let's say, committed a crime, a felony, let's say, and they serve their time, they get out. Do you think those people should be able to have the right to be able to get a firearm?
In my opinion, I think it depends on the felony. If it didn't involve any bodily harm to someone else or aggressive act towards someone else or property,
mm-hmm.
you can get a felony for, let's say, for theft.
Yeah.
That's a poor example. I'm trying to think of another one. There's one on top of my tongue, but, I mean, you know, that's just my opinion.
Money laundering.
If the crime didn't involve another person or property, an aggressive act, it's sort of like how people are, you know, charged excessive prison sentences for an amount of drug that now many places in the country is not only legal, but didn't involve any harm towards anyone else.
Right.
I mean, is that necessarily fair? I mean,
what if that person has committed a crime that, you know, let's say even pertain to gun, like armed robbery, you know, they was found guilty. You know, they did their time. Now they're back out into society. Should they not have full access to their rights anymore?
I think it would depend heavily on the circumstances. And let me answer this way. To have a law or, I don't know, how would we say it, permission that would cause that to be a blanket yes, I think we need to consider how far that could go.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? And I mean,
okay,
that one person. Yes.
Do you have to disclose you have a weapon if you're stopped by the police?
It varies from state to state. In the state of Illinois, you do not until they ask.
Do you not answer?
I'm sorry, you said, can you not answer?
Yeah, so for example, let's say I was pulled over by the police and, you know, they're like, hey, do you have any, you know, guns, bombs, knives or anything like that in the car? Can I say, is it not lawful for me to be able to be like, well, I don't want to answer any of your questions. Why did you pull me over?
Specifically pertaining to the weapons, according to the state of Illinois, you have to tell them that you are in possession of a firearm and the location of it. My question would be to that person, why would you want to do that? What would be the benefit of that question?
Thank you.
What question?
So you're stopped and they ask if you have weapons or whatever, and instead of saying yes or no or whatever you should, in my opinion, you should know why you were being stopped. Are you suggesting not to tell the person at all, or just in a specific sequence? Like they first identify the reason or state the reason why you were stopped? Is that what you mean, or just not, period?
Well, I was just saying, what if you just don't answer that question?
That would be up to the officer. I mean, they have an incredible amount of leeway.
Right.
They might perceive you as being aggressive just there. And in my opinion, that's not beneficial. So why?
Well, I mean, if we think of, you know, situations like, you know, Philander Castile, he, you know, announced that he had a weapon and was killed, you know, immediately after the officer asked for his wallet, you know, asked for his ID, and he reached for his ID, but because he disclosed that he had a weapon in the car, the officer automatically went to another heightened alert of self-preservation, you know, and you know, a person's life was lost.
I see your point. I do.
I mean,
and that's
I mean, just with Philander Castile, not just to, like, keep harping on that one instance, but like that type of situation happens more readily than people realize. It's just that nowadays we have cell phones where video is on all of them, you know, and things can be immediately uploaded and pushed out into the media, and they can't take it away, you know. So like his situation, I'm sure has happened numerous of times, you know, and luckily, you know, his fiance was, you know, had signed enough mind to, you know, document and record exactly what was going on at that moment, you know.
Rather,
but that's one reason I would be hesitant to even inform what I had, if I had anything.
Rather than the question, I think the issue lies before the question. That's training and education. Because people have been shot unarmed on camera when they didn't have anything. So even if I said no, we've seen that someone has still been shot or aggressed against. So I don't think it really lies within the question. If someone has a legal firearm, it's my opinion that you should, whatever your the laws are in that particular state or region that you're in, to abide by whatever that says.
No, I mean, I definitely agree. Only place I disagree there is, you know, when you talk about training and education. I feel like these people are, they know exactly what they're doing, you know, when they're doing it. You know, and the only reason I say that is because we see so many times where white people, you know, clearly have a firearm, act belligerent, and no harm comes to them. And we and the argument is always, well, it's a different officer. It's a different officer. It's a and it's like they use that as a blanket statement, you know, to separate all officers from the negative acts. But, like, you know, realistically, they all in collusion together. You know, we look at the situation that happened at what's the state? Think of the state name, the city name. I think it's not Kenosha, but we see a white kid, 17 years old, go out with a firearm, kills two individuals and injure one, and he has his firearm, walks right past the police, wave at him, give him some a drink, he goes home. You know, you have situations where even more violent, Dylan Roof, you know, goes into a church, kills several people, and they still apprehend him, you know, without any harm, you know. And I mean, and there's several instances like this, and I'm sure they have apprehended black people as well with firearms without causing a lot of bodily harm. But typically, you know, when you are black, the stakes are a lot higher.
It's dangerous to say all because it's not true, in my opinion. And that's the very thing that the African-American community complains as far as that's how they see us. We're all bad. We're all negative. We're all violent. We're all out to hurt. I'm thinking of a training video. I want to say, well, I call it a training video because I studied it, but it's a video of an officer's body cam, maybe California. I can't think of it. This guy was in the middle of the street, maybe a five-lane highway, circling around traffic as someone who was it's apparent he was intoxicated on something or with something, had a butcher knife. And he was consequently shot to death because he wouldn't stop. And the male was, well, both everyone involved, at least in that in the video, was white. So, I mean, all is dangerous. I don't agree with that. I've worked with law enforcement that didn't treat me any different because of my skin, or at least I didn't feel that way. If they did, I didn't know about it. It was not apparent.
Okay, can a person legally meet force with force?
You said meet force with force?
Yes.
Are you pertaining to a firearm or just period?
Firearm.
For example. Okay, so this depends on your state. What your statute says, Illinois concealed carry law essentially describes meeting force with force. They identify the or classify the firearm as being a deadly weapon. So in order to legally utilize the firearm for defense of person, self, yourself, other person or property or other someone else's property, there have to be certain things in place. One of those are a forcible felony. So if they attempt to inflict bodily harm that could cause imminent death or danger to someone else, then yes. So what's appropriate? So force with force. So if someone hits me, I would be justifiable in hitting them back. Someone attempts to shoot me, I would be justifiable in shooting them back.
Okay, but what if you shoot them in the back?
If you shoot them in the back?
Yes.
That's where it gets tricky. I mean, and especially depending on the laws, every state's different. If you shoot them in the back, the very first question I can almost assume that you're going to be, or raise and this is, you know, not just the police, but it's court, whatever, is what, where was the threat if his back was turned, if his or her back was turned? Now, I'm not saying I agree with it, whether or not I'm addressing the question, but that's most likely what's going to be raised. Where was the threat? Was that person run away? Were they trying to retreat? Or were they simply just, I mean, what happened? One of the things I try to highlight in my class is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, finish what you were going to say.
I was just going to say, one of the things I try to highlight in my class is the different opinions or the different things that are going to occur specifically when we're talking about concealed carry in a defensive shooting. So it's not just as clear cut and dry as what people see on the media or television or even movies. There are several different things that are going to happen. So it's not just my story. Even if someone has witnesses or a video, it's all going to be challenged because that's the way it works right now, presently. So I could have video of this. I could have testimony of this. I can have witness of this. And then there's something or someone called a prosecutor, and their job is to examine that. And if it does go to court, to say, no, this is what happened, or to twist it or whatever. So, and that's, so it's not, you know, just it's not as black and white as it may appear.
Okay, we have another caller, 4932. Do you have a question or comment?
What I wanted to say is, to add to what he says, is it's not more so that it's black and white. I think that not only – I think they're targeting the wrong individuals whenever they're talking about the police, because the police is meant to protect white supremacy. I think that there is white supremacists that – I mean, you can see that in the D.C. thing – that are allowed in law enforcement on purpose to police the areas in which that are mainly dominated by black people. So therefore, you're going to always be on the side of wrong whenever that is when that happens. However, I, instead of having what I call quote unquote training, which is controlled by the very people who want this to happen, is instead of having training, you need to start from the top. I mean, all your legislation and everything goes into these congressmen and stuff, the people who were saying, oh, I'm scared to, put Trump in, out of office. Well, they're scared because of the fact that they don't want to give up their white privilege. So therefore, the laws that are systematically put into place that goes that makes the uncut black and white situation causes these things. So what do you think about that, host?
That's been I thought about that, but one thing that the thing that I want to think about or want to present, well, not present because I don't know yet, but how do we fix it? So if we can agree that there's this problem or those things are occurring, then what steps either have been taken or need to be taken to fix it?
Now, for me,
appropriately.
What
would actually yield results?
Well, the number one thing is, if you know the captain or whoever is the law enforcement chief or whatever is systematically putting these individuals in place that you know that they are racist. They got known racist groups inside of the police officers. Inside of the police, you have the known racism, and they know it. Matter of fact, I remember someplace in California where the sheriff sat up there and defended the fact that there was a Proud Boys emblem on another police officer. Well, we let them go ahead and express themselves how they want to. Well, man, really? If you have that automatically in your system, that system should be broken down. So you cannot correct. You cannot. It's impossible for you to train that person because that person automatically has a natural bias against you.
I mean, I think, you know, to the guest point, you know, when he says, you know, what can we do to yield, you know, better results in a manner of what can we do to fix it in a good way, well, I guess, to yield those results. My thought process, when I hear that, I've thought about that question very heavily. And I don't think any law is going to fix that because, I mean, a law can't change, is not going to change the way people feel, you know. I think the way you actually fix that inside of the community is, one, we need to have more black police officers, but not just have black police officers that is endowed into the same systematic oppression of the training that they give. But I think we have to have black police officers in white neighborhoods, and those black police officers should treat those white and those people in those white neighborhoods the same way white police officers treat black people in a black neighborhood. And the white people wouldn't stand for it, and they would call for some type of change, and then we would actually get some type of change at that point, which would blanket around the rest of the state and city.
No, I wouldn't think that would be fair.
Retaliation,
because that right. You would cause retaliation, and two wrongs don't make a right. My thing is to fix the wrong in the first place.
So this is what I mean by that. For example, you look at New York, right? We have New York where they have stop and frisk. All right, let's say we take stop and frisk, and we take that, you know, over to the white community and start stopping and frisking a whole bunch of their white people. Immediately, those white people, especially ones with money, are going to call their lawyers and say, "Hey, this is not right. My rights were violated." They're going to want to take suit. They want to go on to take action. Those actions will inadvertently stop the stop and frisk in the black neighborhoods as well, because then you can't have those unequivocally biases after the court proceedings. And one of the people who was a mastermind of this is RP Ruth Bader Ginsburg, where she took up a case. She took up a case for women, but she knew that women would not get the same treatment inside of the court. So instead of using a woman, she used a man. And it was a man that was, I think he was like house cleaner or something like that, but like he wasn't given the same rights and things as others. But that position that he held was normally held by females, by women. And she used that situation there, and it caused a whole ripple effect and change for the whole entire environment of the way women were viewed in employment. And that went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and that's where she really started to make her name and, you know, make her career.
Yeah, but I don't see that working at all. That wouldn't work in this situation. My thing is, because people don't see you as the same as them in this society. So the thing about it is the reason why they get away with these things is because they don't see that. My thing is, when you know that there are known racists in your police force, and you condone that, right there should be automatic. They go to jail, you go to jail as the sheriff or the chief of police or whoever that condoned this. And the thing about it is as long once they pay, then it'll flip. You see what I'm saying?
I do, but my only issue with that is that only thing that means is that they would have to stop acknowledging it in public. Like you used the example of the chief in California that defended the guy who had a Proud Boys emblem on his uniform / vehicle. I mean, only thing that means is, hey, just take that off your vehicle. You can continue to keep your same ideology and continue to police in the manner that you're policing. They will never be able to prove.
I ain't saying that. I'm saying that guy does not get to work in that precinct. As a matter of fact, he has to do a little time for doing that. I bet you they won't wear that anymore.
That's exactly what I'm saying. They might not wear it, but they will continue to act in such manner. That's the only thing that will happen. They'll just say, hey, put your hood back on. That's all that
means. Well, I guess what I'm saying is, when you know that there are known racists, that means that you, as a hiring individual, have purposely put them there. You see what I'm saying?
Well,
so there needs to be. So I guess my thing is, the reform thing won't work on people who don't see themselves as being reformed. It's just like they just passed this thing in Illinois about, you know, reforming the police and all that stuff. And I'm up there like, that's not going to work. Because ignorance is just going to be ignorance. They're just going to be like, yeah, I passed that test. I can shoot you for real now. Because I passed that test.
We have another call, and that's what, 5240.
You on the air?
Okay, well, maybe not. Cody, could you please tell us about your business and also what you offer and give out the information for contact?
Our business name is UCare Solutions, LLC. We're located in Carbondale, Illinois, and one of our most popular courses is the Illinois Concealed Carry course, but we also offer defensive shooting. We offer instruction in a rifle and shotgun as well, and private instruction for those who desire it. You can contact us at any of our social media pages, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, or by phone at 618-967-6104, and let us know what your goals are and how we can assist you in achieving them.
And with the concealed carry, I guess with the concealed carry, what are the qualifications or guidelines that need to be met in order to receive the concealed carry license in the state of Illinois?
In the state of Illinois, they ask that a person be 21 years of age, have no certain criminal backgrounds would prohibit a person from, well, possibly prohibit a person from obtaining the license, but 21 years of age, they must have a valid FOID card in the state of Illinois, and obviously due to COVID, there have been some, there's been some leeway with that, and I can address that if there's a question, but you must possess a valid FOID card, and they ask for 16 hours of instruction from an approved agency or instructor that is approved in the state of Illinois to conduct such a training, and there is specific information and a specific curriculum that the state has approved to be taught for the Illinois concealed carry license.
When's your next class?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
When's your next class?
Next class is February 12th and 13th, set for Marion, Illinois.
Fantastic. I keep
It'll
missing it.
Well, I took Goldie's class this weekend. I love the class. It was informative. I learned a lot. I love the shooting range. And I will be taking some other courses with him.
I appreciate that very much. This is my passion. It goes past guns for me. Guns. I'm a lover of guns. All guns. That's recreationally. That's fun for me. But the passion comes into how can I help someone through this avenue feel safer? How can I help someone? What can I help give? What can I provide to assist someone in defending themselves, their family, what have you, whatever it is, and helping them be more comfortable with that? And that to me is very rewarding. And it doesn't, for us, it doesn't matter who you are, black, white, gray, purple, whatever. If we could help you with that, we're going to.
It shouldn't.
Okay. Are there any more comments?
Yeah, if you have any more questions, anything you want to contribute, dial 516-531-9540. In the meantime, what would you recommend as, say, a person who is not experienced with a firearm or a handgun, what would you recommend as a first purchase after, you know, obtaining a license and getting the proper certifications in order to be able to do that in a legal manner?
Sure. After determining what you're going to use the firearm for, whether to carry it or just to take to the range, what have you.
For carry,
get a firearm that you perform well with. Get one that my first advice on that is get a firearm you perform well with, one that you can operate safely and control. It doesn't matter how big. You know, there's a lot of Dodge Chevy debates. That's what I call them. You know, we're going to look at two trucks and we're going to argue that one's better than the other. Well, whichever one works for you is what you need to utilize based on hand size, based on experience, based on the mechanics and how that firearm works. You asked, sir, what I recommend. Me personally, Glock is my choice. I'm in a gunfight right now, give him my Glock 19, and I guarantee I'll hit a crater on the moon.
Oh, yeah.
And no, that's not the gun. I train with that the most, so maybe that's why I can say that. That's why, you know, I may be most comfortable with that, but my Glock has never failed. Not one.
And then I guess as far as what type of weapon do you recommend as far as gun do you recommend as far as like not to carry but more or less just to protect your home, like something that would be left in a home in the case of an intruder or a house invasion?
I would say the exact same thing, whatever you perform well with. Some people prefer the shotgun as when it comes to the home. And this, I mean, this has opened up a whole other can of worms, but people forget that if you let's just say you let a 12-gauge go off inside doors, especially small confined space like a house or a bedroom or something, it'll probably go deaf. And then I have someone saying, well, I'd rather be alive than worry about my hearing. Well, sure, but it's just something to think about. I mean, you could stun yourself almost. And then the conversation is, you know, are you going to stay in one place or are you going to search the house? That could present a problem for someone who has not had that type of experience or that training. So, again, I would say whatever you perform well with and are used to.
So
if the majority suggests AR-15, but you can't hit the broadside of a barn with AR-15, it's not going to do any good.
Mm-hmm.
Can a medical marijuana card affect gun purchases?
In the state of Illinois, yes. Once someone has obtained that type of card, many valid gun owners, or, well, we'll say, quote-unquote, legal gun owners, have not been allowed to purchase after the validation of that card. And I believe right now it is still the same. The state requires that person relinquish the marijuana card, and they have to wait a period of 12 months from that date before they'll be allowed to purchase a firearm again.
What are some firearm safety tips that you could tell us about?
Well, the most important one, always keep the muzzle pointed in the safe direction and your finger off the trigger until you're ready to shoot. Treat all guns like they're loaded. Most of the accidental discharge stories that I have heard, whether it's from a student or just conversation, has involved someone not realizing a gun was loaded and not treating it like it may have been loaded. And these are children that have been shot, adults that have been shot, careless. Guns inherently are dangerous. So are jackhammers. So is my 5,000-pound pickup if I'm going too fast on ice. So if people use good sense and respect the firearm, it'll respect you.
Okay, if you have any comments or questions, dial 516-531-9540 and press 1. So is there anything else you think we should know about gun safety, conceal, or anything to do with a weapon?
Yes. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. If you're anxious because you're new to it, or it may be something new to you, or you may not have a lot of information, I encourage everyone to find out more information from the right source, obviously. Wikipedia may not be the best source, but to help you disseminate that fear, right? We have to be very careful about what we hear and see on television. And when I say television, I'm talking about false stories like television shows, but I also mean, and more so, the media, all right? There are proper avenues and proper statistics concerning firearms and firearm violence. And just understand, guns don't kill people. I can set a loaded firearm on my kitchen table and leave it there for 3 days, and if I'm the only one in the house, that gun's not going to hurt or harm anyone. People kill people.
We got a call at 6598.
Yes, I have a question. If you are a gun owner, is there a type of gun that is considered illegal even if you are a gun collector?
In the state of Illinois, we are currently not allowed to have Class 3 weapons. An example of that would be a full automatic submachine gun.
Okay. Even if we are a collector, we're not allowed to have it?
Not within the state of Illinois, unless you have something that gives you that right. But to my knowledge, unless they have changed it, not at this time. And that's the first example that comes to my mind. That's not the only prohibition right now, but yeah.
Okay. And that's any semi-automatic weapon.
Yeah, so any firearm that you can actuate the trigger or squeeze the trigger and hold, and it continues to fire until you release.
Okay.
Silencers are also illegal in the state of Illinois.
Oh, really?
Right now, yes. It's illegal to own...
What if you move from like a state, for example, in the state of Virginia, is one of the most gun friendly places, you know, in America. You can go in, as long as you live in the state of Virginia, you can go in and obviously pass a background check. You can go in, buy a firearm, and also even a silencer. Would you have to sell, or is it really your silencer if you move from the state of Virginia into the state of Illinois, if you already have purchased that, either firearm or attachment?
You wouldn't be able to bring it into, not legally, I'm talking about, into the limits of Illinois, referring to the silencer. So if it was legal in that particular state or that region, wherever that was, that allowed you to have that, I would submit to you that you just have to leave it there.
For one last question, if you also purchase a gun in the state of Illinois, are you allowed to have a beam on the gun? Beam is the one that I'm talking about, like that has the red light on it. If you're aiming at something or a target to shoot at, are they illegal or can you still purchase those?
To my knowledge, most places in Illinois, you can't have a laser.
Okay.
I say most places. I highlight that because some things in certain regions are prohibited in Illinois.
Okay.
I guess what's the purpose for not being able to have a laser on your gun?
I'm sorry, sir. You said what would be the purpose of not having one or actually having one?
Yeah, not having one. I was just curious of, like, you know, do you have any like insight into why there are laws that, you know, prevent, you know, having a laser?
In my opinion, and I'm speaking frankly, there is a lobbyist somewhere, a lawmaker, that would think that it would help someone kill someone faster, or would make the firearm appear to be more aggressive than what it needed to be. That being said, most of the time, lasers are used for intimidation. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to highlight that fact. So, individual has to shoot the gun, right? So, mm-hmm. I mean, I could have a laser, a light, red dot, whatever. It's not going to make mm-hmm. the gun go off by itself, or the gun can't, you know, operate by itself. I still have to shoot the gun, which is why I think some of these laws, Jersey has a magazine restriction or magazine mm-hmm. capacity restriction. It's absurd. I can kill just as easy with 7 rounds as I can with 30. So it's futile.
So do you think there should be any magazine restrictions?
In my opinion, no. If I can have a gun, why restrict it?
Well, I mean, like for the case of like places like, you know, what happened in Vegas. I mean, like, do you think what's the purpose of needing a 100-round drum? Like you said, if you can hit it with 7 shots, I mean, why do you really need 100?
Why not? Some people use it for sport. The shooting sports in this country generate over $80 billion a year. There mm-hmm. are many different types of competitions. This includes hunting, all kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
All kind of things. But if you're already going to decide, and that's a whole other conversation, but decide that a citizen can have this device, this item, whatever, that to me is, again, going back to the drunk driver question. Well, this person hasn't killed anybody yet. They haven't been convicted or been accused of drunk driving, but your engine can go pretty fast. And if you were drunk, this could hurt someone. So we're going to limit how your vehicle performs. I mean, really, I mean, that's where that goes at to me.
That makes total sense.
I mean, I'm gonna be honest. I don't really agree with having, you know, the ability to kill and take life like 50 plus people in a matter of seconds. I mean, I don't think we need that in our streets.
I'm for it myself.
I know you are, Ms. John. I know you are.
I mean, I should be able to have as many rounds as I want. I don't want nobody restricting me what I can do with my gun or guns.
I'm not saying not being able to have, you know, bullets. Like, I just think, you know, being able for a person to have to reload will at least give time for, you know, people who need to gain cover to be able to, you know, have an opportunity to gain cover. I'm not saying that, you know, it's going to, like, those people can't be killed, but I just, you know, being able to, you know, just like having an automatic weapon, you know, to being able to hold down that trigger and have nearly endless supply of ammunition. I mean, that's war. Those are weapons of war.
You don't want to be in a,
I don't want
fight
war
and
in
run
a street.
Out of bullets, do you? That's the
you
same
say what?
Thing. If you were in a gunfight, hypothetically
mm-hmm.
speaking, and
right.
you only had a few bullets in your gun, and
mm-hmm.
they had 100 rounds. How do you think
mm-hmm.
it's going to go after your little 8 shots get off?
Well, that depends on if you hit or not.
Not going to be that good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean,
well,
I have another
question.
You can have a drum. You can have a drum and get killed by a .22. You got the right aim. Just like you just said, you know, if you can hit the person and you can hit your target, you know, with 3 bullets, what do you need 100 bullets for? You know, like, and two, if you are in a gunfight, two, if you are in a gunfight,
or when or how much ammunition or anything I could use. I mean, if that's what you want to do, not have that many or not have much, okay, that's fine.
Hey, I'm always
going to
say, if you can have it, I want it. I'm always saying, if you can have it, I want it. You know, I'm not going to sit here and say, I don't think we should have 100-round drums, but since everyone else has 100-round drums, I'm not going
to
have one because I don't believe it.
Okay. I have one last question for the guest speaker. If you are a person who is in the military and you are you retire or you are honorably discharged, and they carry automatic weapons, are they allowed to keep their weapons with them, or do they discharge them to the discharge them back to the military?
That is a good question. I do not know the military's procedure on their weapons that they're issued, I would assume that they would keep their weapons. When I say they, I'm referring to the military, much like most police departments, unless you purchase that firearm yourself. You have to relinquish that to the department or agency because it belongs to them.
Okay, because I was just thinking, if someone discharged from the military and they were living in the state of Illinois and they were able to keep their weapons that they had, especially if they are not allowed to have an automatic weapon except for someone on the police force or anything like that, I was like, wouldn't that pose a problem as far as gun laws are concerned in the state of Illinois?
It would be, and I have many friends and some family that are military people. And they have suggested that if you take anything that belongs to that organization, that you will be in big trouble if they find out. But as far as specific policies and procedures, I am unaware of those.
We have another caller, 6120, 6120.
Hello?
6120, you on the air? Yep.
Yeah, I can answer the previous caller's question, and that is that when you come back off deployment, you have to turn in those weapons. Those weapons don't belong to you. They are assigned to you. They belong to the taxpayer. So when you come back in, everybody turns in their weapons. People don't walk around the base with weapons. The only people who are on the base have weapons are military police or shore patrol if you're in the Navy. But, yeah, those weapons get turned in when you come off deployment. People don't walk around with them. They don't belong to you. They are assigned to you, and they belong to the taxpayer. So that's how that works.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that clarification.
Thank you.
Do we have any other questions or comments?
Well, I do want to thank Goldie for coming on my show, and I would like you to give out your information once again in case somebody missed it, where I can get in contact.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me. This is Goldie Robinson with UParry Solutions out of Carbondale, Illinois. Please call us for all your firearm training needs at 618-967-6104, or in addition, visit our social media pages on Facebook, Instagram, or Snapchat also under UCarry Solutions and see what we can do for you.
Do you guys also sell firearms there?
No, sir, not at this time.
Okay. Is that something you're looking to do in the future?
I've considered it. Whether or not that will be in the state of Illinois, I'm not sure, but I have considered it.
Cool. In the state of Illinois, I don't know if you know this, but what is the law in pertaining to being able to sell from ownership of a weapon from person to person, or does it have to be from business to person?
No, someone can buy from an individual. So let's say you want to buy one of my guns. You have to have a valid FOID card. I have to go to the Illinois State Police website and enter your information on a specific form, and once the agency or that website approves the transaction, then we have to keep a record, and they'll provide the form on the website, a record of that transaction for 10 years.
Another question. Mm-hmm. I do have a question. Hello?
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. What if you haven't received your card yet? Can you still come in and look it up when they told you you were approved to get one? It's just taken forever to get it.
Are you referring to your FOID card?
Yes.
Yes. If you have your registration set up through the Illinois State Police website, you can check the status of your FOID card and your concealed carry card.
Okay.
Oftentimes, let's say it's approved and you just haven't received the physical card, then online it will reflect it being approved, and you will be able to see your FOID card number oftentimes.
Okay, I'll do that. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
And do you want to give out your information one more time, because the show is about to end? You want to give that information out one more time for anybody who missed it?
Sure, please. We're called You Carry Solutions, and we're located in Carbondale, Illinois. And our contact information, our phone number is 618-967-6104. Or you can find us on any of our social media pages, our Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat. You Carry Solutions, it's the same way. And find out how we can help you improve your skill.
Well, thank you for being my guest.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it. This was fun. We got to do it again. Can't be the last time.
Okay. You will definitely be back on.
That was good.
So thank you. And